This is Outdoor America with Tommy Bench. Each week we'll talk to the pros and explore the wonderful world of fishing. Outdoor America is brought to you by Wholesale Batteries, the right battery the first time. By Baitworks, shop where the pros shop. By Boatworks, performance specialists. By the Bass Tank, whatever brand of fishing electronics you're looking for, Bass Tank carry it. And by Summit Finance Group. Now, here's the host of Outdoor America, Tommy Bench.
Good morning and welcome back to Outdoor America. It's been another great week of fishing for myself and clients. I've got a really neat story to tell you. But first of all, I've never experienced this. It's something you won't want to miss for sure. I've got a great guest coming up, full of knowledge. I mean, this guy can catch anything that swims under the water, really. He's one of the best I've ever met. And not only that, he's an electronics specialist. So I can't wait to bring him on. Matter of fact, let's just bring him on right now. Let's get the show going. Rick Fishback, welcome to the show, my friend.
Oh, man, thanks for having me, guys. Very blessed to have the opportunity to be part of the show.
Yeah, and you know, I've had a couple. I had your partner, actually, a few weeks ago, Mr. Terry Blankenship.
Oh, yeah, the man. Absolutely, man.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about how you guys, man, you guys really, really jive together so well. It's amazing. I was talking to Terry about how good you two fish together. It's almost like that you guys are just whenever you get in the same boat, you're almost as one. Like you think you it's like you know what the other's thinking and the other knows what you're thinking.
Yeah, you know, I think a little bit of that to do is, you know, Terry's just an unbelievable fisherman, man. And, you know, if his gut's telling him something, my gut tells me to follow what Terry's doing. And
yeah.
I think it's the same, you know, with him. You know, if I feel pretty strong about something, we never hiccup with each other on that. If he's got a strong feeling, we follow it. If I got one, you know, he follows it. And, man, it is a great relationship. It's a great teamship, so to say. And, you know, we're just – not everybody jives together in the boat, and we happen to. So
yeah, that's a fact. I mean, you guys were on a roll there. You had a couple, two or three wins there in a row, and you guys every week in and week out, you guys are right there at the top. I mean, it is what it is. And you guys, you know, like Terry said, I think that you guys both have the same mindset. You're not thinking like, I wish we should be doing this, or vice versa. You both have the same mindset as far as like, this is the program, and this is what we're following. So.
Yeah, you know, and that's true. And even to say that, as far as that mindset goes, I would narrow it down that I'm big fish orientated, and Terry's the same way. You know, we don't go out there trying to find, you know, a limit first, then we're gonna go hunt a big fish down. Neither one of us roll that way. We're hunting big heads from the first cast to the last.
That was my very next question, because, you know, there's the difference. Some guys are going out there just trying to catch fish. They're just trying to catch a keeper, you know, and right. I think having that mindset goes a long ways, because when you make it happen, you got the right fish and you're not scrambling at the end of the day thinking, man, we just need a kicker now. You got your kicker or two a lot of times, you know, early.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and there's something to be said about that. There's a lot of guys that are out there, you know, they're out there to fish and to catch them. And I, God bless them. You know, we're all out there for the good time and everything else, but you know, you'll see us swing a lot and we strike out, you know, we're not the guys that come in with that 11 to 13 pounds. We either got a big old sack or we just missed them all together, you know, it's just our mentality. And it blends well together because we're both on the same page.
Yeah, hey, something else I was talking to Terry, and you know, this is not all about Terry, this is about you and this particular show.
I'm just talking
about you and Terry, because you guys are partners and you know, do a lot of fishing together. But, you know, what's your, as far as you're talking about big fish, what's your strong suit? You know, Rick is talking about you in particular, not you and Terry, like just you. Do you go out there, like, are you a jig fisherman? Are you a cranker? Are you finesse fisherman? You know, what's your style if you could pick one, if you even could?
You know, if I had to pick one, I would say I'm a cranker, man. I'm a cranker through and through. Main reason being, you take a jig guy, which I am a jig guy. I love to throw a jig. I'd like to think I could throw it with the best of them. But I take a guy, take Tommy Bench in the front of the boat with me standing there next to him with a crankbait, I'll get three casts twice as far in before you get your one jig fish cast in. Work to the boat.
Hey, good point.
Yeah, I, you know, right off the bat, I'm covering three times as much water and three times as much time, you know, getting those baits casted out there and brought in.
Right. So, a very good point, because that's something that's been brought up with any big time angler, you know, KVD or any of them guys that the power fishermen like that, they'll say the same thing. Cover water, cover water, cover water. And, you know, but to a lot of us, Rick, may not, you know, they may not have that, be in tune with our gear and all that kind of good stuff like you are. For example, some guys just say, I don't like crankbaits. I get clients all the time to tell me they don't like crankbaits, and I don't understand why, because I do. I have a certain time that is better than others. But, you know, what advice would you give people as far as, like, you know, there's literally hundreds, if not thousands, of different patterns you could choose. And I know that's kind of where Crankwraps comes in, to kind of help narrow that down and make it real, you know. But so yeah. What kind of advice would you do, is, you know, give some folks if they wanted to be a little bit better, more effective at cranking, because sometimes they just feel like they're just casting blindly.
Well, as you know, I'm also a guide, and not just an instructional graph. I actually have my guide license too, and I do a lot of instructional fishing also. And I can guarantee you the number one problem, or the number one mistake that guys are making with a crankbait, and I mean, this is the number one, hands down, can't be disputed, is they are not casting it far enough. So if I had to pick one thing to say that guys are messing up on, is they're not getting their bait out there far enough. So a crankbait, understand, especially a deep crankbait, it has to have a certain amount of distance to get to that strike zone down low, to get to its max depth to work. And when these guys, you know, are making, you know, this is no doubt. I mean, I feel like I make, you know, about a 70 yard, you know, 60 to 70 yard cast every time I throw. I mean, you break that down, I mean, I'm throwing 100, 120 foot every cast.
Absolutely.
Every cast.
Yeah.
You know, but I throw it on an 8 foot, you know, an 8 foot rod. I'm throwing a big old plug. You know, my equipment has a lot to do with that, to be able to throw it that far. I'm making big swings. I'm swinging for home runs every time. And, you know, that gets my bait that opportunity to get down there and do its job. So I see a lot of guys that I've took out, you know, they're making at best half the cast that I'd like to see done to get the, you know, to get that out of it. And that would be my number one if I had to pick one, man.
Well, that's great advice. That's very good advice. I'm glad, you know, is there anything, you know, also I know you, obviously, you know it way better than I do, but your line, I'm sure the line makes a big difference on the depth as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And now, you know, there's a big, big variant there. I have recently, and when I say recently, the last 3 to 4 years, I've gone to big line only. I used to be an 8 to 10 pound guy. You know, I'd throw my DD22s and everything on 8 to 10 pound. I don't throw a crankbait on anything less than 15 pound anymore. I catch them all over the Midwest on it. And yeah, it's because that 15 pound test can take that big plug, and I can put a lot more whip on it with an 8 foot rod and it not break my line. So, you know, I've definitely talked out of both sides of my mouth on as far as line size goes, and I'm pretty much one dimensional now on it. I throw 15 pound test on deep plugs, and I throw 20 on shallow plugs. And I pretty much live or die on an 8 foot pole.
You throw a mono or fluoro?
I throw fluoro. I throw 20 pound Seaguar.
20 pound Seaguar. That's good.
On my shallow stuff, and 15 on my deep stuff. But yeah, I'm a Seaguar fan. I'm not sponsored by them or anything like that, but I think it's the best line on the market right now. I'm definitely toying with a new one out there that Daiwa's got out. Everything all my experiences so far with it's been great. That's probably a story for another subject, but you know, line is, man, I know everybody's got their own favorite flavor that they have of it, but you know, line's a big key. It's the only thing between you and that fish.
That's it. That's right. You know, and something else, you know, I don't know if, you know, you're talking about between you and that fish, then you also got a knot. Are you in particular, you think a certain knot's better than others, or is it just a standard polymer, or is it something different?
You know, I do tie a standard polymer knot, but I'm a fan of any knot that is run through that bait twice, like a polymer knot is.
Gotcha. Yep.
Anything that's doubled through that bait, I would suggest is a good knot. I'm not a big fan on the old school Turner six times,
no,
runner through. You know, there's,
yeah, me neither.
That's not a strong knot in my opinion. But yeah, anything that's doubled through that, you know, obviously the knot is always the weakest point. And I you know, throwing big baits, heavy baits, I'm hung up all the time, man. So I break plenty of them. I break plenty of them, and very seldom does my knot ever break when I have to break a plug off.
Oh, right. You're not. Yeah, I see what you're saying. That's good. So speaking of breaking off, this is something I was just wondering. You know, if you know you're around them big fish and there's a brush pile or whatever the case might be, and you do get hung up, do you stay off of them and just break that off so you don't spook them? Or does it not affect them much if you go right up and try to get that thing out?
You know, that's a great question, but I'll explain it like this, man. 90% of the fish I catch, I done drove the boat over the top of them and graft them up and turn around and catch them. If the big motor ain't scaring them, I ain't worried about the trolling motor getting over the top of them, scaring them to get my bait back.
Absolutely.
And that's just a theory. That doesn't mean it's right, but yeah, it doesn't bother me to, you know, go up and get a bait that I got hung in a pile and turn around and go right back at it and fish it again, man. I do it all the time, and I've caught plenty of them doing it.
Well, that's one thing I was wondering, because I know a lot of times, you know, people wonder, am I scaring these fish off, or is it, you know, and speaking of scaring fish off, I've got a good question for you coming up in the later segments that was brought to me by my good buddy, Ken Miller. You know, Ken Miller's a crappie fisherman, fishes the Lake of the Ozarks. Yeah, he's a good friend of mine. And I was talking to him earlier, and he said, you know what? I told him I was going to have you. He said, you ought to ask Rick about electronics and about crappie in particular, because, you know, as we all know, you're a multi-species angler, and you're very good at all of them. You know, you're one of the ones I can look at and say, that dude can catch anything that swims. It don't matter if it's crappie or bass or walleye or, you know, whatever it is, you can catch them. But I've got a good question for you coming up. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. So we'll be right back in just a few minutes. If you want to catch up on Outdoor America programs, go listen on demand at 610sports.com weekend programming channel. You're listening to Outdoor America on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app, powered by Baitworks. Shop where the pros shop. Welcome back to Outdoor America. I'm Tommy Bench, and we're back with Rick Fishback. We were just talking about crankbait fishing and the different tactics on doing that, but now we're going to change gears a little bit and talk a little bit more about fish care. Rick is one of the best, you know, at fish care. He just posted a video up recently about this in particular subject. So, Rick, go ahead, and I just want to hear, like, your take on, if you can describe it, because I know the video you posted was a video. I mean, is there a way to describe it over the air? On, you know, how to educate people a little bit and to explain what fizzing is.
Yeah, no problem, man. Yeah, I think I can probably cover that pretty good. So, number one, you know, we have to protect our resources out there. And with electronics becoming the way they are, more people are becoming more offshore deep fishermen. So when you catch a fish, you know, even as shallow as 12 foot, when they're brought up fast, they get what's called the bends. And the bends is it makes them produce too much air in their bladder, and they have no way to release that air. So what we do is we take a needle, a syringe, and we go in and we release that overabundancy of air in their swim bladder to relieve them so they can go back down in the live well or in the lake, however you're doing it, and make it through the day. Now, if you don't do that, that fish stays up on its side high in the live well, and he fights it all day, and eventually he will perish from trying to right himself, but he does not have the opportunity to do that without releasing that air out of his swim bladder. And like I said, I do that with a 16 gauge needle. I'm a big fan of doing it in the mouth, and it's, you know, a fish has two crushers in his mouth. When you open his mouth up, you grab him that bottom jaw, you know, you torque it open a little bit. You can see those two crushers in the back of his throat, and his air bladder is right between those two crushers, straight back. You don't want to angle it up and you don't want to angle it down, just straight back. And you'll hear the air immediately start to release out of a fish. I'm a big fan of only 5 seconds of releasing a fish out of it or air out of a fish. You can let too much air out of a fish. That's 100% chance. You let too much air out of him, he can't keep himself upright in the live well neither. He goes down on the bottom of the live well, and you know, he'll lay sideways on his side and he can't ride himself. And of course he'll perish from that also. So there is an art to it, you know, and I've got a video out there. It's on my Facebook page. It's on my Instagram page, and it's been shared, I think it's somewhere around 1,100 times now. It's got over 3 million views. It's a good video on how to take care of it. And I only do that because I'm a big believer in taking care of our resources.
Absolutely. You know, he's talking about, you know, just explaining to the folks how to fizz a fish, Rick. Here's something else that I want to get your take on and maybe educate people on this as well. There's a lot of tournament guys I've seen in the past that did not know how to fizz a fish. So instead of fizzing or taking a chance on killing that fish by doing it in proper way, they would weight them, you know, put the weights on their fins. Well,
yeah, fin clips.
The fin clips. There you go. So that's pretty much the same thing. But as soon as they let them go, that fish is in the same situation if they had never done it to begin with, correct?
Absolutely. So here's my take on fin clips. Number one, it does save the fish. Number two, it will not save the fish. And I know that's a double-edged sword there, what I'm saying. It only saves the fish till weigh-in. When you release that fish out in the lake, you're not leaving your fin clips on him. You know, you're taking them off. He's going to go out there in the lake and get right back sideways again. Or, you know, in the release boat. I work just about every release boat at every tournament I go to. You know, and every time I get up there to do it, I always grab two or three people out of the crowd and take them up there with me. And I try to help educate them on, you know, how to stick a fish, how to fizz him correctly and let the air out of there. Because fin clips do not take the air out of a fish. I've heard, I can't tell you how many guys, and just because I'm who I am, when I see a guy that says, no, fin clips will do this, fin clips will do that, I pay attention when he weighs in and we go to the fish tank together when he lets his fish off. Out and every time those fish come up to the top, and that's usually where I take my opportunity to, you know, to show them and teach them how to properly fizz a fish. But yeah, fin clips, man, very seldom have I ever heard of them taking air out of a fish. I think sometimes guys think it does because a fish will also pretend but he'll have the same scenario as going on his side in warm water. You pull a fish out of 15 foot of water and dump him into 85. He'll go on his side also. And a lot of times, you know, ice in that fish, G juice in that fish, it'll upright him because, you know, it's the same scenario. Taking a fish out of cold water to warm water, he'll also go up on his side. A lot of people will confuse that with the bends.
Oh, I see. And they don't realize that they probably don't even need to be fizzed. It's more of just the water, the extreme temperature change.
Yeah, the cold water's taking, you know, I've seen a lot of guys throw fish in live wells, then they start putting their ice in after they've got their fishing live well. Then they're fin clipping them, you know. Well, you know, I fin clipped him, and he swam off the end of the day. Well, he swam off the end of the day because you finally put your ice and your G juice in there and got him acclimated to the water that he came out of.
Yeah.
So you know, I think there's a little confusion on how, you know, when and how to fizz fish, but there's nothing on a fin clip that takes the air out of a fish.
That's right. So, you know, getting back to, you know, I keep thinking about you talking about whenever you go in between the crushers with the needle, with the syringe, which is, you know, designated folks. So it's not like you just go find a needle in your home. This is a specifically designed for doing this, but you get that. And you said, don't go up, don't go down. So are you saying you're basically going in between the crushers, like almost like you're going straight through the fish, meaning like if you was to draw a line down that lateral line, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I want to go, you know, I want to aim for the V in that tail.
Gotcha.
If that makes any sense at all. That's my target, is the V in that tail.
Okay, and perfectly
described. You'll hit it right every time. If you'll draw that imaginary line from the crushers to the V in his tail, follow that angle, you'll never miss.
Man, that's perfect. That is a perfect description right there. What great info that is. And, you know, that's, like you said, how many fish's lives are you saving? You know, a guy like you, if you can't be at every tournament. You know, but no. That's just passing this information along.
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad we're talking about it. I'm glad we got videos out there about it. You know, I tried, that's my biggest thing is fish care. That's one of my biggest preaches is fish care. Only because we go to plenty of tournaments and see where they're not being took care of. It's our future. It's just like, you know, take a kid fishing, you know, well, that kid's got to have a fish to catch. We got to protect our resources.
That's right. That's right. And that's right now, especially in the summertime like this, that's the number one way to do it.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, one other thing that we'll talk about that you might be able to help us with and educate maybe some more anglers on, just not only since we're talking about fish care, what do you do in particular for a deeply hooked fish? You know, if they take too much of it, you don't realize, you know, it happens. It happens to the best of us.
Oh, absolutely.
They hook them deep. You know, what do you do in that instance?
Well, I may backpedal and sound a little confident in this. I haven't had a deep hooked fish in probably 5 years. I'm a big believer. Fish don't have hands.
Yeah.
I feel a fish, even look at it, I'm getting him. I'm not a guy that reels down, make sure he's there. And I really haven't had a deep fish hook in 5 years. And man, I fish 3 or 4 days a week and I catch my fair share of them. But when I do run across that instance, I'm a big believer in not cutting the line. I actually cut the hook with a pair of dykes. as low as I can get that hook, I would cut that hook with the pair of dykes. And even if he is not bleeding, I still dump a little 7-Up or Sprite down his throat. And
nice.
Yeah, the acid in that will actually clot any blood or any tear or anything he has in him. The acid in 7-Up or a Sprite will actually clog that.
Man, that is probably the best advice I've ever heard on deeply hooked fish in my life. I've never heard that, but that is absolutely genius. And I'm not trying to toot your horn there, but I am. I'm telling you, that is an awesome, awesome idea. And I don't know if you just come up with that. It doesn't matter. That is awesome, man. But hey, let's talk more about that. I want to talk to you a little bit about some electronic stuff too. So stick around. We'll just hang tight here. We'll be right back. If you'd like to catch up on Outdoor America programs, go listen on demand at 610sports.com. Weekend programming. You're listening to Outdoor America on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app, powered by Wholesale Batteries. The right battery the first time. Welcome back to Outdoor America. I'm Tommy Bench, and we're back with Rick Fishbag. If you missed it just on the last segment, Rick gave us some absolute genius information on fish care. Rick, go ahead and give us a run through and kind of go back through what we just talked about in this last segment about fish care. Maybe. The deeply hooked fish.
Yeah.
And maybe the fizzing.
And the fizzing. So two things I guess we went through there. You know, number one is, you know, catching a fish deep that's got the bends on how to remove that air, you know, with a 16-gauge needle. We're gonna open his mouth in between his two crushers. We're gonna draw an imaginary line to the V in his tail. We're gonna insert that needle about an inch to an inch and a half until we hear the air release. We're gonna do that for 5 seconds, a total of 5 seconds, and then we're gonna let him go in that water. Now, the reason we do 5 seconds is because we can't let too much air out of that fish. Believe it or not, I've let too much air out of a fish one time. I tried to put the air back in him. I don't know if you've ever tried to give CPR to a fish, but it does not work. So you can take it out of him, but you can't put it back in him. So
five seconds,
put him in the live well. If he comes up on his side a little bit, you can always let a little bit more out, but you can't put no more in. So 5 seconds at a time on that. And the second thing we talked about is a deep hooked fish. And what a deep hooked fish is, you know, he's got the bait, the hook's down in there too far, whether it be, you know, in his gills or down in his stomach area is usually where it happens. I'm a big believer. I don't cut the line. I cut the hook as close as I can down through there. I want to minimize the least amount of metal in that fish for him to try to, for either to digest it, for it to deteriorate or to regurgitate. You know, I want to give him every chance I can to get rid of that. And I'm a big believer in cutting the hook, not the line. And then I also use a little bit of 7-Up. I keep it in my boat. And I, even if he's bleeding, man, it'll stop it right away. But I do it anyway, because I believe no matter what, you probably gave that fish a little tear and he could start bleeding a little later on. So
yeah.
I always use a little bit of the acid in that 7-Up will stop that. It'll clot that fish, that wound up. And that's an old trick I've been doing for 20 years. And I'm telling you, it's knock on wood. And I hope to not jinx myself, man. I catch my fair share of them. I ain't had a dead one in 3 or 4 years now. It's coming. It happens.
Well,
no matter
you know.
What you do.
What great info that is, though, Rick. You know, I'm so glad you made the comments you did about the fish not having hands, because that's like one of my famous quotes to my clients. They're like, hey, oh, are you on there? Dude, he ain't got hands. He ain't got pockets. If you feel something, he bit it. It's in his mouth.
Yeah, he ain't got it tucked under his fin and running for the goal line. You know, give it
that's
to
right.
him.
Dad, go. I'm like, set the hook, son. Come on. I tell my wife that everyone gives her a hard time sometimes because she sets a hook real hard, because I taught her that way. You know, it's the way.
Right,
it's
just, absolutely.
You know, and if you feel something, it's jig fishing, crank, but it don't matter what it is. Like you said, they don't have hands or pockets. So if you feel something, it's in their mouth. You set the hook. I've seen a lot of people lose fish because they wait too long too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, the famous old quote that ought to be on a bumper sticker, hook sets are free. You know,
that's right.
Give it to him. Right. You know, swing on him.
Definitely set the hook if you feel the bite. I'm so glad you said that, because that's been like a staple of my preaching of fishing. You know, over the years, I've said the same thing. And I just don't get, I see some people that are like literally, well, are you on there? Are you on there? Well, dadgum, the lion's on, he's already swam 20 foot with it. You know, he's right. He's already pooped it out.
Yeah. Before he sets the hook, grab the 7-Up. We're going to need it.
All right, Terry, grab the 7-Up, bud. All right. So, hey, something else I was wanting to talk to you about is electronics, you know. And here's one thing, and I'm not trying to make this a war between LiveScope and Hummingbird, but I will say this. I know a lot of folks that use both. And in particular, my good buddy Ken Miller was talking to me earlier, and he was like, man, talk to Rick about what he thinks about spooking fish with that 360, with that Hummingbird, because for a fact, you can be shooting docks and have that LiveScope transducer pointed towards them, and it spooks them. You can see them move. You can see them kind of get away one way or another. And he was asking what your thoughts are on do you think, you know, with 360 kind of turning, does that change the game as far as not maybe spooking them as much? Or you know, we're going to use, you want to talk about the new electronics coming out anyway. So we just go ahead and dig in right there. We're starting with that.
You know, you're 100% correct. And I have heard it before, but I have seen it more than I have heard it. I don't know what it is. You know, I mean, I'm an electronic chaser of fish. That's what I do. It's my favorite thing to do is chase fish with electronics. And there's 100% chance with a live unit. I don't care if it's Lowrance, Hummingbird, Garmin. I can't tell you how many times I have pointed that unit over there at them. They not bite. They not bite. They not bite. Pointed away from them, throw it back in there and catch him.
Right.
Don't know what they're feeling, but that is a proven fact. Other than the obvious, I don't have a good excuse for it, but I have only seen that on live units. That is not an issue on a 360.
Right.
But
I agree.
It's not live.
It's not live. And that's exactly what we were talking about, what we were discussing, thinking maybe that's, you know, we just want to get your point of view because, you know, you're dealing with them electronics every single day. You talk to people about electronics and, you know, that's kind of your game, you know. So mm-hmm. I just knew that you'd have a little bit of insight. I wanted to get what you thought about that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm in 100 boats. I just got off the water with one. I'm in 100 boats a year. I see it all. I see Lowrances, Garmins, Hummingbirds, everything out there. And, man, you know what? Every one of them have a good point to them. I mean, they all make great units. You know, they all have their time and place. And I really think it's just, you know, whatever guy's preference is. And, you know, maybe he just wants all Hummingbirds on his boat. Maybe he just wants all Garmins on his boat. You know, Hummingbird, we just came out with a new thing called Target Lock. And, you know, it's cutting edge stuff. And we are the only one that has that capability right now. And, you know, what Target Lock is it's a device that hooks to your trolling motor that you put your Mega Live transducer on the bottom, okay? And it's not hooked to your trolling motor. It's hooked to a separate pole off the trolling motor. And what I can do with that is, you know, if I'm in spot lock, I can aim that over there and select that brush pile. No matter how many waves hit me, no matter how much wind hits me, no matter how much I position the boat, that unit automatically stays focused on that brush pile. I don't have to control it left or right, select a different, you know, it stays locked on that point of interest until I decide to not have it locked on that point of interest. So I don't know if everybody understands what target lock really is. It is not like that pole that's out there that, you know, you can turn left and right besides the trolling motor, you know, separately. It does do that also, but it has the capability of to lock onto a target.
Wow. That is amazing. You know, that's what the whole industry has been waiting for. Really?
Yeah, it is. You know, it is cutting edge technology. The possibilities of where it could go are endless. And, you know, there's no doubt it's, you know, fishing in a lake, especially a deeper reservoir, it has become an electronic game. You know, and if you're not playing that game, you're a little bit behind the eight ball.
100%. Also, you know, with all the electronics coming out, there's new devices coming out. You know, everyone's trying to keep up with everyone else with this and that. And it's only going to get better. You know, we know that just like you was just talking about what they're coming out with now. And that's, I can't wait to see what it's like, because I've always said that, man, if there was a way you could lock in on something or view something and still let your spot lock do its thing and hold you in position without turning left, turning right, you know, nonstop. And, you know, it's just so harder going past docks to look underneath them to see if there's crappie underneath there. But also, speaking of crappie, I got a question for you about some crappie in just a few minutes. I was want to ask you about. See if you know. I know you and Terry fish together, and I thought maybe you might have a little insight on it. So hang tight. Yeah. We'll be back. If you want to catch up on Outdoor America programs, go listen on demand at 610sports.com weekend programming channel. You're listening to Outdoor America on 610 Sports and the Odyssey app, powered by the Fast Tank, America's experts for marine electronics. I'm Tommy Bench, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Outdoor America. I'm Tommy Bench, and we're back again with Rick Fishbag. We've got lots of good stuff going on here, folks. We've been talking about fish care, electronics, all kinds of good stuff. But hey, Rick, I was wanting to talk to you a little bit about the crappie fishing. You know, like we was talking about, you know, you're like one of my idols when it comes to like multi-species anglers. There's a lot of guys that are specifically bass, specifically crappie or catfish, whatever, but you're one guy that just, I mean, I try to be like you anyway. I love to try to target multi-species, but these crappie on Lake of the Ozarks in particular, what's going on with the black crappie? I mean, why are they so hard? I see all these people talking about catching all these white crappie. Do you have any insight on that, or what's your thoughts on that, if any?
Well, I've got a few, and I hear it all, and just because I'm fortunate enough to be in the right circles. But, you know, I hear the biologists say that we just have a lot more white crappie than we do black. And I've heard Terry say, I think he's wrong. I think we got more black than we got white. So for both sides of that, you know, the biologists say we have more white crappie than we do black would be my first comment on that. But my second one would be, man, I believe, and this is, gosh, you know, I'm just a dumb redneck from Fairgrove, Missouri, but I don't know why it is, but the white crappie school so much easier. They seem like they're dumber, you know, yeah. They're easier to catch.
I agree.
And, you know, and the black crappie are kind of like that old buck, you know, that you're hunting. You know, he just got more age on him and he's just smarter. And it just seems like that's how the black crappie roll. You know,
so that may explain a lot of what's going on right now in this summertime pattern. These guys are trolling or doing whatever they're doing to catch these crappie. And it seems like it's nothing but whites.
Yeah, that's right, man. They're just easier to catch. That's a fact. It's kind of like, I don't know, flathead fishing and blue cat fishing. Which one's harder to catch? You know,
yeah,
a flathead's way harder to catch than a blue cat.
And absolutely.
They're all a fish. Shouldn't they all be the same? And they're both, those are both catfish, but man, you know, you can go out there and catch, you know, 100 blue cats to one flathead.
It's absolutely. I agree 100%. I mean, I get it. Now you use that analogy and anyone that understands catfish, and that makes 100% sense. You know, it really does. So yeah, they just, you know, and hey, something else, you know, when do you, you know, I know you fish a lot. Like you said, you're on the water pretty much every day. So what do you have, what makes you decide on what you're going to do as far as, I mean, crappie fishing or bass fishing or walleye, or, you know, I mean, what, you know, any particular favorite season, you know, you got a favorite season you like better than any other?
Man, I got a lot of favorites, and that's my downfall is I love them all. And, you know, a lot of people wouldn't probably guess this, but I love to bass fish, but my heart is at crappie. I would rather crappie fish every day than do anything else, but there's a lot more bass tournaments out there, and there's a lot more opportunities in the fishing world as far as promoting and on the bass side. And I do enjoy it. I do love it, but there's something about crappie fishing and that thump, you know,
that we're all
chasing, and it's always action. You know, I'm a big hunter myself, and, you know, I like to chase ducks. Okay. And chase geese. Okay. But, you know, when it comes snow goose season, it's all action packed, and I chase snow geese. And I think it's the same way when it comes to crappie. No matter what, there's always action with crappie. So if I was trying to decide what I'm going to do for the day, unless I got a tournament coming up, you know, I was just crappie fishing 2 days last week, and I do got tournaments coming up. I should have been spending time out there chasing bass, but you know, I can't, you know, it's hard to kick that thump of those crappie when they're biting. And right now they're biting, on certain areas of the lake. They're not on brush, so to say. They're not on, they're heading towards docks, and they're kind of in between, and they're so much fun to figure out. I love the hunt. My saying is I'm always in it for the adventure, and there is no better adventure than having to figure them out every day.
Yeah, I agree. So here's another good question for you. Here's one thing I'm thinking about. And I'm like you, I'm very, very involved in all the outdoor, you know, fishing sites, you know, Lake of the Ozarks, crappie, Truman or whatever, you know, all this bass fishing, this crappie, this blah, blah, blah. So I hear a lot of guys that are like, oh man, these new electronics are going to completely ruin the crappie population. They're going to have to change this. You know, now we're finding crappie in the middle of these coves, 100 foot off the bank that no one ever knew existed. Now that we have this electronic technology, what do you think about that? Do you think it's going to actually, you know, put a dent in our population, or do you think it's going to be fine? I mean, what's your thoughts on that anyway?
I mean, simple Simon thought process would tell you the more fish that come out of the lake, the less we're going to have in it.
Right.
And there is no doubt we're pulling 10 times as many fish out of the lake than what we ever have. And it is 100% due to the electronics. Now, you know, can the lake sustain it? Can the conservation keep on top of it? You know, that's yet to be seen. You always hear theories. You always hear people's opinions. I would think that the conservation will have to step in and start changing either size limits or, you know, number limits before long. But, you know, I say that we're still young and as far as a live game goes. I mean, how long has a live unit been out? 5 years?
Yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly.
At most?
Yeah. At most.
I mean, what's the next 5 years going to bring, you know? How long can it sustain pulling fish out of, you know, these lakes that long? We don't. Who knows? Or, you know, on the flip side of that, you know, bringing that many fish out of the lake, is that creating more bait fish because not as many bait fish are being targeted by those numbers? Therefore, we're having more bait. Is that allowing us to have more fish?
You know, right.
There's a flip side to both sides of that, man. And I see both sides of it.
There really is. And, you know, like you said, maybe changing some length limits to, you know, going up from 9, maybe 10 inches or so, you know, I don't know, mate. I don't know.
I'm with you. And it'll be, we've had the same laws on the conservation side. I'm a big conservationist. I support them 100%. But, you know, we've had the same laws in Missouri, heck, older than I am.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And it makes you wonder, you know, I've talked about this a lot too. If guys like yourself and myself wanted to keep our limit of, we'll say bass, okay? Legally keep our limit of bass every time we go out there.
Absolutely.
And of course,
you're right.
Can you imagine how detrimental that would be to our fish population if we all did that?
We would not have any bass. I think that's a fact.
Yeah, that is fact. We would diminish the population in a hurry.
Yeah, we would be like China and Japan over there. I mean, those guys go out all day long to get a bite. Sometimes all week long to get a bite. You know.
Wow.
Because they've just fished it down to nothing.
There was no conservation at all. There was no management at all.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, that's what I'm saying. It'll be interesting to see where this goes in the crappie world. Now, when I say that, I mean, you're comparing apples to oranges a little bit because, man, crappie is a schooling fish. They populate fast. You know, as long as they got the right conditions. One crappie, I'm sure, has probably got 10,000 eggs in it, which I'm sure a bass does too. But
yeah.
If you don't think there ain't one bass every 100 crappie in the lake, you are incorrect.
Exactly. Yeah, we've seen
every 100 crappie.
We've seen proof of that by seeing multiple bass, you know, by seeing marks where you can tell that bass has been caught before, had a cold tag in it or something. You know, you just know it. But
oh yeah, 100%.
You're 100% right though. But hey, I was wanting to also pick your brain a little bit on electronics on current. You know, how much experience, you know, do you have with fishing, like you're the perfect guy to ask because that's kind of your profession is the electronics. But I was wanting to pick your brain on that, see what you thought, because I'd really love to like nail this down. I've got to get with you one of these days to try to like really, really get good with my electronics, because I feel like I'm very good on the river to begin with because I spent a lot of time on the river. But man, if I was as good as a guy like you with my electronics, I could have only imagined knowing there's a 4-pounder there or a 5-pounder or whatever, you know? So, hey man, stick around, just hang tight. We'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. When we come back, I'll give you more updates on the current fishing, and we'll talk more with Rick Fishback. If you want to catch up with Outdoor America programs, go listen on demand at 610sports.com, weekend programming channel. You're listening to Outdoor America on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app, powered by Boatworks, performance specialist. I'm Tommy Bench, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Outdoor America. We are back for the final segment here with my good friend Rick Fishback, and we're talking everything fishing. Honestly, we're not just talking one particular thing. But Rick, I was wanting to touch base with you on electronics and current. You know, that's been an issue for myself, and I just want to get your take on that and see what you thought about trying to pinpoint fish and getting good accurate readings in high current conditions. Maybe not super high current, but you know, like just like a river system.
Yeah, and you know, I do a lot of graph trips, and I have been on plenty of graph trips with just cat fishermen that do the Missouri River, you know, below Truman up at Lake of the Ozarks. I've been on plenty of them, and there's definitely for sure a different setting on any electronic when you're talking about a current situation versus a calm lake. You have to take some of the power out of the units, and whether that be on your gain, whether that be on your sensitivity, there's too much debris. It's even the bubbles, you know, these graphs are not your grandpa's graphs. They can pick up anything in that water column.
Absolutely.
Well, anything it's picking up is a disturbance. So sometimes it's hard to see through a disturbance when it picks it up. You know, you're behind a shoal, Tommy, over on the Niangua somewhere, and the water's rolling over that. There's air bubbles coming off that shoal that your graph's going to pick up, and you won't be able to see through that. So you got to take some of the power out of that graph. And when I talk about power, it's usually sensitivity, or on some other units, other brands, I know it's their gain.
Right.
And I know that will help you a ton. And then you need to bring your range down on how far you're looking with those electronics. You know, if you're normally, you know, if you're looking through a side scan on them on a river system, I'm never above 30 or 40. Where on a lake, I'm 70 to 100.
Exactly.
And that's feet, you know, that I'm talking there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to turn the power down. You got to bring the range down. And of course, you know, some current, when it's just rolling, there's not much you can do about it.
Well, yeah. And like you said, there's just too much going on. But my biggest issue, I think, is I would see, like last fall, I was using my live scope, for example, and I was seeing, I was like, man, I know that's not fish, but those are just like leaves. They were just submerged leaves that were swimming by. And then I would see fish, but then it was hard to see, you know, fish on the bottom, or how do you see fish around structure, for example? You know, I guess that's something that they would almost be beneficial just to have you, you know, just to have you hire you to take to go out and do that.
Yeah, and that's one of the gigs I do, is I do electronic training on the water and off the water. Last week I was just in Czech. I was not in, but I did a FaceTime with a Czechoslovakian fire department, and I helped them with their graph systems for search and recovery, is what they were using it for. And I've done those from, you know, from there to Canada to Australia. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the gig I do. It's kind of got, when they, you know, old James Watson's worldwide, man, I really have been doing it worldwide.
But, that's right. You're the real worldwide around here.
But no, it's, you know, and, you know, it's just technology, even the phone systems, to be able to do that over a Zoom meeting or over a FaceTime. It's just allowed a lot of opportunities, and I'm really fortunate to be able to help everybody out no matter where you are.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, we was talking, I was also talking to you about your, you know, I just found out, you know, that you really, truly passionate about crappie fishing and whatnot. What would be, you know, just in particular, not just crappie, just your favorite, do you have a favorite time of the year that you prefer to?
I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I'm very, very strong about fishing in February for crappie.
February.
Yeah, and I don't throw crappie baits. I only throw bass baits, and it's my favorite time of year. I mean, it's those 100 to 200 fish days. They're all monsters.
Wow.
It's all on a big jerk bait.
Yeah.
You know, if I had to pick one month out of the year to go catch them, it would be February, and it would be with very big baits.
Biggest crappie you ever caught here in, well, anywhere? What's your biggest crappie?
Well, hey, here, this is a good one, okay, because – I'm telling you, I catch my share of these things. I've yet to ever catch a 15-incher.
Really?
My first 15-incher, I will have a replica made of it. I've yet to catch him. And there's no doubt in my mind, I catch 15,000 of them things a year.
I guarantee you probably caught more 13 to 14 and 7/8.
Oh, I'm measuring them, a lot of them. And I've caught plenty of them. You know, I fish all over, even bass fishing down south. I've caught plenty of them monsters on a swim bait. I ain't never had one. I hear all these guys, I had a limit of 15 inches. Ooh, I'm going to need to see the proof in the pudding on that one.
That's right.
because I've yet to catch one. I've only had one caught in my boat, and the guy did mount it, and we was in a crappie, and we was in a crappie tournament. It's been some years back.
Wow.
But, that's the only one I've ever seen, man. And I've been a share of catching them and of seeing them caught.
What do you think of 15 inch weighs? Two?
Oh man.
Two and a half. Would it be 3 pounds?
Two and a half, two and a quarter would be a good guess, man.
Yeah. Okay.
I think a two and a quarter. I've caught my share of 2 pounders. I've weighed my share of 2 pounders in, but I'm going to say two and a quarter.
Favorite bass. Would you rather catch largemouth or smallmouth?
Oh, largemouth.
What's your biggest largemouth?
I caught a 914 on Kentucky Lake. That's my biggest. I've never gotten the double digits.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of the holy grail, isn't it? Double digits for any, I mean, just bass fishing in general. But it'd be hard to do.
Yeah, but I've had 330-pound sacks.
That's amazing. That's almost as good to me, in my opinion. That's about as good as saying you caught a double-digit bass.
Yep. You know what? Yeah, no doubt. Well, 2 years ago, you know, on Palmy, four straight tournaments, I had over 100 pounds on four straight tournaments. And I don't know if that's ever even been done in Missouri before, but I did it 2 years ago on Palmy. That's a heck of a fishery over there. And that was a very special time to catch four sacks that average over 25 pounds. That's tough to do.
That is great.
Four straight is really hard to do.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. That is amazing. You know, Rick, I've known you for a long time, had you on the old radio show, and man, I love watching you, dude. You're an amazing individual and a great outdoorsman. So I keep following you. You know, speaking of following you, how can people follow along with you or hire you to go out fishing with you or to learn their electronics? Go ahead and let them know how they can get a hold of you to do any of those things.
Yeah, man. So, of course, my name's Rick Fishback. I do have my master captain's guide license. My phone number is 417-840-0406. I can be reached at rfishbackjr@gmail.com. You know, my Facebook is Rick Fishback. My Instagram is Fishback Attack. I am TikTok famous. It is also Fishback Attack, but I can be found on any of those platforms, man.
That's awesome, guys. Folks, you won't regret it. Go follow him. This dude's a flat-out hammer when it comes to catching fish, killing deer, goose, catfish, walleye, crappie, you name it. Hey, it was good having you on the show, my friend, and I look forward to getting with you and maybe doing some fishing together one of these days.
Absolutely, man. It's been a pleasure, guys. You guys enjoy your day and try to stay cool. It's hot out there.
All right, buddy. You too. We'll talk to you soon.
See you guys.
If you want to catch up on Outdoor America programs, go listen on demand at 610sports.com. Weekend programming. Outdoor America is presented by Wholesale Batteries and by Boatworks, the Bass Tank, Baitworks, and by Summit Finance Group. I'm Tommy Bench, and we'll see you on the water.